Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
So, Bruce, at least Eric and it seems like everybody, including Miz, admitted they knew Edge would come out at the end of the wedding vow renewal ceremony. I don't ask this very often, but, I mean, were you sufficiently entertained by what WWE chose to end Raw with? And, of course, the caveat being a lot of their main wrestlers were not available due to COVID issues. And that was apparent with a stripped-down roster and what might qualify as filler. But this was a segment they had advertised. I don't know if it ended the show or not, if not for everything else going on. But did it work well enough for you, or did it seem like a disaster or other?
I'm right in the middle, I think, because what worked for me is throughout this feud, Edge and now the Miz and Maurice have rightly pointed out the obvious things that are going to happen that fans are expecting. So at least they're pointing that out and trying to work around it. So I give them at least props for not just going with the same old and then having it, you know, at least be addressed. And I liked how Edge feigned like Beth Phoenix was about to come out. I thought she was about to make her entrance, and then I thought, wait, it might be too early to start that Mania build. So I like how he switched to the Brood and mentioned about this wasn't supposed to be all white, right? And I think even though the blood looked fake as all hell, I think that contrast it created between that, you know, obvious fronting of a presentation of the Miz and Maurice as this pure, untouched, amazing couple with, you know, the red blood, which probably is more indicative of how people think about them within the WWE sphere. I think it worked there, but I'm just ready for this feud to be over. I said when Edge came over and they started the feud that while it's not exciting, the Miz is a perfect person for the Edge to have his first feud back with. So I just want to see what happens moving forward. And I really hope this doesn't extend to something happening in the Rumble match or anything like that. I just hope it ends on Saturday.
Well, you did say it's too early for Maurice to come out and start the Mania build.
That's true.
So for you to, you know, break that news or break that many hearts for people who don't want to see this go that long, I'm not, you know, totally against that. It depends on a variety of factors, including, you know, what other options would you rather see Edge in for a WrestleMania match? But, you know, kind of like the mixed tag with Cena and the Bellas. And so, it's just like sometimes they got to put something different on WrestleMania that you just sort of feel is different than what you would see on a regular TV show. And they look for that stuff. And, I mean, whether you resign yourself to it or look forward to it or resent it, I mean, you're not wrong to have that be on the radar, that this could stretch out that long. I'm watching Edge talk, and it's fine. He's, you know, Edge is good at everything he does, but I just can't imagine 4 more months of it. Like, I almost feel there'd have to be some sort of a detour that Miz would split off, something would happen, and that would cause Beth Phoenix to get involved, and then Edge is like, I thought I was done with you. Like, revisit it, like, in March, but I can't imagine going through January and February and March with these, you know, with Edge and Miz still going back and forth.
I think I'm just like Edge, and I'm sick of hearing The Miz and Maurice go off on these 15-long-minute promos of just obnoxious BS that I know it serves their characters, but it's getting to the point where, I mean, Maurice almost got what chanted out of the building tonight. It's only Eric Bischoff, but, and, you know, the crowd, I think that third hour really dragged, but, you know, overall, the show did fine for the restrictions they had because of COVID. I'm just not sure having this as the main event angle, I should say, really helps build more interest in Saturday's pay-per-view, for Raw at least.
A couple things. One, if this was a WWE Network event, they would have pushed it a lot harder. They'd tell you how to get WWE Network. You know, there's just not this desperation to hard sell in WWE anymore, which is, you know, kind of nice, but it's also kind of weird. And if you're Peacock, you're like, hey, aren't you supposed to be trying to get people to watch? And I know it's called day one and all that, but people are used to Sunday pay-per-views. And I don't know if they pushed it Saturday night, but if it was a regular pay-per-view that you had to pay for, I guarantee they'd have said it's Saturday night like 80 times. And they didn't. So I throw that out there in terms of like, how, like, all these, you know, everything going on with COVID, people might have read about it, certainly, with a home video selfie from Seth and Big E. You know, some people might have thought, oh, they just gave him the weekend off because it's, you know, Christmas. But Seth, you know, self-reported that he tested positive. Becky missed the MSG show last night. I mean, a lot of big stars were not in person at Raw, including Bobby Lashley, who did not send in a video message. MVP was there to speak for him. You know, they had to call a lot of audibles. So, I'm going to take that into consideration in you know, all of our discussion. I mean, if mm-hmm. you think this was a bad episode of Raw, you know, fine. It's a bad episode for you, but it's not the usual inexcusably bad show in the sense that they definitely did not have all their resources. Reportedly, Vince McMahon wasn't there. Kevin Dunn wasn't there. I mean, like a ton of producers are out with COVID related issues, either testing positive or being around someone who is and not sure. And so it's just an upheaval. WWE also sent out memos saying, and Fightful Select was the first to report this, that, we're not going to do COVID testing anymore. So I haven't seen the memo, and I mentioned this earlier in my VIP focus on WWE hotline. You know, I want to reserve my criticism a little bit to see if there's some sort of context, but everybody's response is my response, which is, could the timing be worse from a optics standpoint? You know, like half our crew, give or take, wasn't at MSG last night. We had to fly Edge in to fight Kevin Owens. I'm sure Kale was happy to main event MSG, but he'd rather do it under other circumstances. And a bunch of people aren't there. Top stars aren't there. Oh, yeah, and this is the week we send the memo. Like, don't hit send on the memo. Wait a couple weeks. Like, let's let things – or a couple months even. Or don't do it. Maybe keep testing. So that was weird. So this is a weird show overall. I'm sure we'll get into that as the show goes on. Go ahead, Bruce. Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is, too, yes, it was a weird show. They I think it was fine for what they had. They also advertise all the matches as is for Saturday. It seems like they're expecting everyone to be okay. And I'm not sure if you should be making that expectation with this new variant, how everything is going. I mean, looking at the NBA, the NFL, the NHL, they're having hundreds, literally hundreds of players go into COVID protocol. They're having to sign players off the street just to fill rosters. So it's really going to be a touch and go thing. And I don't think Friday's show is taped. So, you know,
well, Friday is just the best of show. So.
Oh, it's the best of show. Okay, yeah, because it's going to be New Year's, right? Okay. Yeah. So I guess this was the final thing, and we're going to have to pay attention to any news that comes out to see if anything happens with day one. They might not even tell us until the event happens.
You know, I think because they got a heads up on all these test results going into the weekend, that they're going to have 7, maybe 10 days of being able to isolate everybody. So the issue is that they're asymptomatic. And I mean, I saw a chart today. I mean, the hospitalization rate with vaccinated people has not gone up during this Omicron surge. And it's gone way up during Omicron with unvaccinated people. You know, so if WWE wrestlers are vaccinated, and WWE probably knows who is and who isn't, they might have a real high confidence level that people who got, you know, all three vaccinations, the first two and the booster, the odds of them having severe symptoms or being hospitalized is really small. But if you're unvaccinated and you test positive, there's a better chance, like, you know, even a healthy 20, 30, 40 year old is probably going to be fine, but much less likely to be fine than somebody who's vaccinated. So I say all that not to preach about getting vaccinated, but my belief is it's obviously safe and obviously something everybody should be doing, but some people don't find that obvious and so be it. That's my opinion, but I'm not even trying to interject that in the show here as much as saying WWE knows that. And I think they probably feel like there's a level of confidence that if people are not symptomatic and they're vaccinated and they got their booster and they're otherwise healthy, there's a good faith. It's in good faith to advertise them for 5 days from now. That's my kind of starting position till I hear something that makes me think otherwise. And I think that's reasonable of them to not just go, well, we're not sure about anything. I think it's reasonable to expect that a lot of those people will be there. Now, I haven't thought through was there any match they didn't advertise that they had prior?
I'd have to go back and look, but it seemed like everything that had been scheduled, the Morgan Lynch match, the WWE Championship match, the Tag Team Championship match, those are all going on. I think there was only 6 matches. I think it was 3 per show. Yeah. So those 3 from Raw seem to have gone on as scheduled, at least for tonight.
Yep. So again, I think WWE might have, it's reasonable to think WWE might have expectations that are well-reasoned, that they will still be able to put the show on. The thing is you can, some of the wrestlers there tonight might have tested negative on Saturday, mm-hmm. but a test result might come back tomorrow that now they're infected. That's just how this thing is working. Anyone who's traveling and not wearing an N95 mask, you know, can get this really easily compared to the previous, the original and the other Delta variant. So there's no talent. I mean, they could have a bunch of people who were on Raw tonight or who we don't even know from SmackDown who end up testing positive in the next few days. So we'll see. I you know, WWE not testing, maybe it's a way to go, well, you know, see no evil, hear no evil. Like, we just don't want to know who has it since everyone's mm-hmm. getting it anyway. Let's just get on with the show and not have to bother with these tests that cause us to then have to, you know, set people aside. I sure hope that's not the rationale of this. But it's a weird week, and with all the holiday travels and everything going on, I mean, it's just, like you said, the NBA and the NHL getting hit so hard. You know, everybody's dealing with it right now, and it's not a surprise that it's hit WWE like it has. Bruce, remember any thoughts you have? I do want to pause, introduce ourselves here, and then we'll get on to phone calls. We have an on-site correspondent scheduled to call us. Nice. We'll check the inbox and see if people have any thoughts on Raw. And so let's get the invites out here and introduce ourselves. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, December 27th, 2021. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the editor, founder, publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, which predated the internet. Also, the editor of PWTorch.com that launched back in 1999, a different century. And also the host of many podcasts, including this one, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, and a handful of VIP exclusive shows, including the Wade Keller Hotlines, including the Focus on AEW and Focus on WWE variants. I probably shouldn't use that word, of the Wade Keller Hotline. I walked into that on purpose. But, so we've got different formats of solo shows that I do throughout the week covering news and analysis, including behind-the-scenes scoops and details. And then also The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, post-pay-per-view roundtables, Keller Conversations, and more. So if you're interested in being VIP, not only do you get all those other shows that are only for VIP members, but shows like this have the ads and plugs edited out. So the digital inserted ads that run every 10 to 15 minutes and some of the in-house plugs go away. And it's just a streamlined listening experience compatible with Apple Podcasts. And you can also sign up through Patreon if you're part of that ecosystem. Full details at pwtorch.com/govip. pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear is Bruce Hazelwood. He is the, I guess we'll say you still are, the pwtorch.com Raw Alt Perspective TV reporter. I plan to fire you later tonight, but not yet, Bruce. We can still call you that. No, you are moving, shifting voluntarily to be the NXT 2.0 Alt Perspective reporter starting next week. But for now, you are the Raw Alt Perspective reporter. Bruce, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thank you, Wade. And it's a little interesting because I think ever since Survivor Series, Raw has been on a good streak of shows. Even when there's some stuff in the, you know, within the shows you don't like, I think overall they've been good. And I'm leaving kind of right as we get into Rumble season, which is generally right when the shows get really good. And so I'm hoping that whoever fills in for me has good shows to work with. And then I'm excited for NXT because, you know, I'm similar to Tom Stout and I like developmental. One of the things that drew me to NXT in the first place all those years ago was that it was developmental or supposed to be. That was redundant. It was supposed to be developmental. And it also hasn't had an alt-perspective report for the Torch since sometime in the summer. So I think it'll be good to have another perspective on what is now a completely different show from what we've come to know as NXT.
All right, very good. I want to give out the phone numbers, invite anybody who's listening live to join us and let us know how you think WWE did with the special circumstances that they had tonight with a bunch of people out with COVID, and also your thoughts on the Miz and Maryse wedding, Eric Bischoff's performance, and all the other matches and all the other angles. The number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call push 1 on your keypad, that'll flag you on our switchboard and indicate that you want to be on the show. And if you've already called in and haven't pushed one at any time during our show, you can push one if you are so inspired and want to be on the program. You can also email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. So send your questions or comments on Raw. I'll be by Wednesday night also after Dynamite in Jacksonville for the return of Jim Ross. He's gone through 20 radiation treatments, and he's got two more to go for skin cancer, and he's excited to return on Wednesday night. And we'll have full coverage of that show. I'm very curious to see what the follow-up is on Cody Rhodes beating Sammy Guevara for the TNT title on the Saturday Night Rampage special. And he was booed and booed and booed. And then on the comments section, they had to just turn off comments online on social media. It was everybody was just so upset with Cody ending Sammy's reign. I talked at length about that on my VIP exclusive Focus on AEW podcast that I started back on November 1st. More days than not, although I took some days off during the holidays here, we run updates just about every day on AEW. And that was interesting topic today. And I really am curious if Cody's going heel or not. And I gave my reasons why I think he is and why he isn't based on the presentation of the show Saturday and other things that I am seeing and hearing. So again, cool reason to go VIP. But we're here tonight to talk about Raw and a little bit of day one coming up on Saturday, because certainly the show was focused on that. So first things first, I see Nick and Sean are on hold. Anybody who's on hold, stay on hold. We're going to go to our on-site correspondent first. Grant attended in Detroit tonight. Grant, thanks for joining us. It's great that we have an on-site correspondent for an episode of Raw that was different than I think a lot of people anticipated when they bought tickets. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I sure can.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It definitely was different. Cause nobody realized basically until they got to the building that half the roster wasn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. It was definitely a different.
Grant, talk about how much chatter you picked up on and how you felt about that. Obviously, this wasn't false advertising originally, but I am curious if there was any way that you felt WWE could have let people know and should have let people know, and did they let you know in the building, you know, as the show started? Did they give you any kind of heads up? They did at MSG last night. I'm curious if they did tonight.
They did not send out anything I saw. Normally, they blast you with emails or they'll announce it, you know, as people are going in the building, if anybody wants refunds, this, that, and the third, you know, it was none of that today.
What are you aware of that they advertised would be on the show when tickets went on sale?
When tickets went on sale, from what I remember, they were just advertising four-way, which obviously I'm pretty sure we wasn't going to get, but with Lashley, Big E, Seth, and KO. But if you mean like originally they didn't advertise anything with Becky Lynch.
Okay. So basically you got Kevin Owens. That's about it from that group. Well, I mean, yeah. So
he's really good, so.
That's true. We got a lot of him. Grant, how do you feel about it? Like, I mean, just, you know, honestly, do you feel like you got, you know, you're disappointed, or do you think they came through enough given the circumstances that you're forgiving?
Given the circumstances, I'm forgiving because they gave us, like, some of their better workers in longer matches, which is something you normally don't get from WWE. But the pacing of the show, it was kind of tough to sit through. Like,
yeah,
especially in building, they're like, oh man, so, I feel sorry for some of those performers, like the Street Profits and AJ Styles and maybe like Dolph Ziggler. All them set in between segments, maybe 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes between their entrance and actual match.
You know, my suggestion when it's going to go that long is that they should have somebody who, I don't know, Mike Rome even. Have Mike Rome set up a table and two chairs and a chessboard and aim a camera down at the chessboard and let the fans watch and find out who's maybe – I'm trying to think, like, maybe checkers who go a little faster. But if Mike Rome's really good at chess, just, like, try to see if he can beat these wrestlers in a game of chess in the building while all this other stuff's going on. I'm only – it sounds like I'm joking, but, like, something to entertain people in sort of a tongue-in-cheek way that would not just lead to the light, the ring. Because did anything go on during the breaks, or was it just the ring was darkened and the wrestler sat in the corner?
Now they did try to do a couple things during the break. They had like a Undertaker cam who could do their best Undertaker impression. They did and that was pretty funny because Kevin Owens healed off on the crowd during that. He said everybody sucked, so that was pretty funny. They had one segment that where they wanted everybody to pose like Hulk Hogan, and as soon as Real American started playing, the whole crowd booed. That was funny. Like,
really?
Everybody. Yes.
Good for Detroit.
Wow.
Very good for Detroit.
Why? That's interesting. I'm not shocked by it, but I'm like, interesting. You know, I'd say poor Hulk, but I don't feel that way. Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. then I think they did like a Cena cam or something like that. But yeah, that was basically what they were trying to do, you know, in between. But yeah, a lot of it was just sitting with the lights out, showing segments of Broken Skull sessions. And I think like one time we got a video package of Liv Morgan. I don't know if y'all got that.
Yeah, we did.
The history. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, that was about it. It was like I said, it was kind of rough to sit through.
I got two more questions for you, then I'll throw it to Bruce for anything he wants to ask you. The attendance in the building, how full was the crowd in terms of, I mean, obviously they didn't put people behind the stage, but it did look on one of the camera angles that all the seats to the left of people of the hard camera were full. And often they don't pan quite that far over to the left of the stage to show that section. And the wide shots looked pretty good. So I'm kind of curious how much of the lower bowl was full and how much of the upper bowl was tarped off versus full.
It was a pretty packed house. Like, it would be what you would probably call a super spreader event. it was definitely more packed than normal. Lower bowl was full. Even all the upper seats, you seen people, you know, it was, you know, a few empties. The only place that was really empty was the floor seats in front of the where the hard cam is at. Like, that was basically like probably 70% empty, but everywhere else was full. So all together they probably packed the building about 90-95%, which is good for WWE, because normally when I go to these shows, like the holiday shows, because the kids out like this, they normally do, you know, fill up a little bit, but like just on a regular, you get maybe 70-75% full.
My other question before I throw to Bruce for a bit is the what happened before Raw went on the air, and did they give you any kind of main event after the wedding or after the vow renewal wedding thing?
Okay, so I got there. By the time I got there, whatever they did beforehand was over. I know they. I asked somebody though. They said they basically only got one match up. And I didn't even bother to ask who it was.
Sure.
But
yeah.
Afterwards, though, no, they didn't give us anything. They basically got one and said, "See you later, Detroit." Normally, they give us a return date. They didn't even give us that. So that was pretty much it.
Yeah, you would think on a show where it's really stripped down, you know, they'd want to get somebody in there special to give you a dark match, especially with a big crowd.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like people in wrestling who go, we work harder when the crowd is bigger and we don't work as hard when it's small, because I think every fan who pays deserves the best show possible. But from a WWE business perspective, that's a really good crowd. And you would just want to give the impression, yeah, given all circumstances, we're working really hard to give you something extra and get a couple SmackDown people in to do a dark match or something. So I'm surprised/not surprised they didn't do that. Maybe they won't be back in Detroit long enough that people will forget. So, yeah, that's too bad. So basically, you know, there was one dark match and what you could have watched on television and nothing else. But their roster was so stripped down. I mean, I do, you know, again, I give some latitude for that before I'm too harsh on them.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely thought they would give us something, like just yeah. to kind of try to make up for missing so many people.
Especially because they ended with a wedding segment. You know, like, if it was a match, if it was just a kick-ass match that went 20 minutes, like, okay, but, like, did people kind of look around going, really? That's it? Did you get that sense at all? I don't want to, you know, project what I think might be the case if it wasn't, but did you notice that?
Yeah, I definitely, I did, because a lot of people were just standing around, like, waiting to see if anything was going to happen afterward, and that's when they finally got on the mic and was like, so see you later, Detroit, you know, just to kind of get people to start moving, because everybody was kind of sticking around thinking, like, maybe we would get something else, like anything. it was definitely pretty rough.
Yeah. Bruce, go ahead with any questions you have for our outside correspondent.
So I will say, to play slight devil's advocate, it's probably a real pain to clean up all that fake blood really quickly to get a dark match out there. So there's that point. So because you brought it up, my first question is, that third hour from when Dolph Ziggler's music hit to then coming back and they had that video package to then Damian Priest's entrance to then another commercial break and then formal ring introductions before the bell rung, that to me was the spot where the crowd really lost the investment and momentum of the show the most. And it really seemed like it came back to bite them in that last segment when Bischoff and Maurice were trying to speak. So was I correct in that assumption, or was the crowd reaction really more negative throughout the night?
No, that was definitely when they lost it, for sure. Like, you definitely see the change. Because for the most part, the crowd was pretty enthusiastic up into that match at that point, because we got basically 20 minutes of nothing. So they kind of killed the crowd, for sure, with that. And you would think, like, with them already, from what I'm hearing, having a hard time selling out day one, they'll try to, you know, be a little bit more, you know, enthusiastic. I mean, you know, I know they were shorthanded, but it was like, yeah, they definitely killed the entire momentum of the show at that point. And it definitely came through in the last segment.
Yeah, that's for sure. All right, and my second question is, I think the show started off, not the promo segment, but I think in terms of having those first two matches back-to-back, I think it started off hot, and I tweeted, you know, just give Chad Gable a raise and a push. How do you think this RK-Bro and Alpha Academy feud is coming off to the fans, even though Alpha Academy is not facing them for the Tag Team Championship on Saturday?
From a fan perspective, from what I just saw and from what I was hearing, like, well, first, RK-Bro might be they most overact on Raw. Like, their reaction was crazy. they were hot for them the entire time. But Alpha Academy, I guess they've done a pretty decent job building up Otis. So, like, people kind of actually did see him as an actual threat. So it went off pretty fair. Like I said, with RK-Bro being such a hot act, I could see, you know, it did help move things along a little bit.
Okay, sweet. And then my last thing. Do the fans know about Grayson Waller? How do they react to Waller's interruption and kind of introduction to the larger WWE audience tonight?
Nothing.
Nothing.
They didn't know Grayson Waller is. I did, because, you know, before I stopped DVRing 2.0, because it's just really hard to watch, I seen, you know, a little bit of Grayson Waller. But, nothing. Nope. Most of the crowd didn't know who he was. Like I said, I knew who he was, but I still don't know what they see in him. He is not good.
Okay. Well, you know, Kelly Wells thinks he's going to be on a fast track, and I put in my report tonight that I think this might be setting up for Waller to eliminate Styles in the Royal Rumble, as Waller being one of the NXT appearances, and maybe that sets up for a a match on Mania weekend, either for the NXT show or a Mania match proper. Maybe with the crowd reaction tonight, though, that they'll think otherwise.
Yeah, and there's something else that I did notice with them being affected by COVID this week. Them having such a thin roster really is biting them in the butt right here.
I was thinking of that. Granted, it's a really good point. Like, you know, we sit here and go, well, you know, you never know when stuff like, you know, I should, you know, this was out of their control in theory. You know, it's happening everywhere. You know, you can say, well, maybe they should be, you know, everyone should have been more careful, whatever. But this variant is super easy to spread. And, you know, it's just normal precautions aren't working. And that, so WWE is getting hit like everybody. But if they had more people on standby, if they didn't, you know, clear out the roster of so many wrestlers, they'd be in better shape. It was, I am curious, hopefully we can find out, like, how many of these segments would not have happened if it weren't for all the people who were unavailable. You know, Grayson Waller and you know, Shelton and Cedric with one more pitch to join, Apollo Crews and Commander Aziz with that weird switch, like, oh, it's going to be Aziz, and then they go to break and come back. Oh, no, it's going to be Crews. Like, well, what was all that about? Why? That was weird. So, yeah, it felt like a lot of shows in there. But, you know, go ahead, Grant.
No, I was about to say, so you all didn't get the part where they switched from Aziz to Apollo Crews?
Nope.
They just told us the decisions were made during the break, right, Bruce?
Yep, that's all they said. They came back from break, and Jimmy Smith said, during the break, Apollo Crews stepped in for Commander Aziz and said he was going to take on,
what it pretty much was, Aziz got ready for the match, and then Apollo Crews took the mic, said, he changed his mind, he going to step in for Aziz. And I didn't know that was televised. I thought you all got that because it didn't go dark until after that.
Interesting.
Grant, tell us if there were any responses that surprised you, either like a positive or a negative, or more or less intense than you anticipated. Did anything stick with you tonight as far as that goes?
Chad Gable got a lot of heat. For sure. That was a little surprising. I mean, I guess, you know, he's taking shots at the city, which most of the heels that were on the show did this today. But that was surprising.
Does that work, by the way? Does that work in Detroit, or are people going, yeah, you're right, like about the Lions, yeah, you know, you're right, it is tough. Like, are people really, because I generally don't know, are people defensive about Detroit and have a lot of pride in the city and all the things that they have accomplished?
Well, you being a Vikings fan, you kind of familiar with Detroit. Our team has been pretty bad for a while. So, you know, when people tend to insult it, like, if you're not from here, a lot of times people don't like you insulting us. But, you know, in most cases, people are like, yeah, you kind of got a point. But it did work with this crowd just because it was so many, like, families, like, with it being a holiday show. Like the normal crowd that you would get, maybe not so much. You probably would have had a lot of people more so feeding into it, but tonight it definitely worked.
I will take a little exception as a long-suffering Minnesota pro sports fan. The Vikings are nowhere near as difficult to watch as the Detroit Lions, and I feel for you guys. We get a lot of like 9-7, 10-6 teams. A lot of we make the playoffs and then lose right away. We've had a couple NFC Championship games thrown in. I mean, it's fun. There's hope every year. And with, you know, poor Lions fans. I mean, there's like none of what I just described. I mean, so
we pretty much
I feel
have
extra
the
bad
worst
for you guys.
Team in every. We pretty much have the worst team in every sports league right now.
But you know what? I'll take your Detroit Red Wing and Detroit Pistons banners in our sports arena. Yeah, I would like those as a Timberwolves and Wild fans. So, I mean, the Timberwolves banners are like attendance record, their first year in the Metrodome, and the Lynx, the WNBA team winning, you know, championships, and then the rest is like paid advertising or something. I don't know. Yeah, hopefully, I think we're on a good path with that team. But anyway, back to Raw. So, Grant, anything else surprised you as far as responses go?
I think the MVP Kevin Owens segment, the crowd was a little confused. That kind of came across.
Because
Kevin Owens just got down healing on the crowd. But then, like, you had MVP come out who, like I called in last week when I was asking you, like, did you think Lashley would be end up being Reigns' opponent for Mania as a babyface? So, but MVP still was coming off kind of heelish, so it was like, the crowd definitely kind of was a little confused. They didn't know who to cheer for. Then they eventually started cheering for Kevin Owens, but I don't think that's what they wanted because they want him to be a heel. I don't know what WWE was going for there.
Grant, is there anything else you want to share with us before we let you go and bring on some of our other callers?
I'm trying to think. I didn't write anything else that I didn't get in. Merchandise. The only thing I saw, basically, now, this is something that I commonly see in Detroit. You just get mostly older retro shirts, like, in the crowd. You don't really see too much nothing else. You'll get some John Cena and Roman Reigns, but other than that, it's mostly Austin or NWO, a lot of Macho Man, stuff like that. And then at the actual merch stand, I think they basically had one shirt for everybody. It was one Roman Reigns shirt, a Mysterio shirt, a John Cena shirt, a RK-Bro shirt, and a couple localized shirts.
All right. Grant, thank you so much for talking to us after Raw tonight. It's always great to hear what happened in the building, especially on a odd night like tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's not a problem. I'll definitely be giving you a call back.
Excellent. Safe travels and Happy New Year.
All right. Thanks. You too.
You bet.
Quick question, Wade.
Yeah.
Do you know why WWE stopped using local talent as enhancement and jobbers? I remember, is it because of James Ellsworth? I remember they used a lot for Braun Strowman's initial singles run. Why did they stop? Do you know?
I think they just do it when they want to do squash matches to introduce somebody who's a monster heel. And if they're not doing that for someone, then they don't scout for local talent that they can trust not to get them in trouble with a lawsuit because they break their neck in the ring.
Okay. Yeah,
that's my
you.
Short answer.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We'll head to the phone lines. Call us if you're listening. We'd love to hear from a first-time caller. I know some of you are on break and maybe listening live when you otherwise wouldn't be. I know it's late for so many of you on work nights and it's tough to call in. But we'd love to hear from you here on a holiday week. Our number is 347-215-8558. 347-215-558. Push 1 on your keypad to join the conversation. All right. Yeah. Got more to follow up on, but we'll bring our callers on next. We'll go to Nick first. Nick in Brattleboro, good to hear from you. Nick, welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Happy winter solstice. Took a couple of weeks off from calling, so it's good to talk to you again. And I just want to give a shout-out. You mentioned Sean. Just want to give a shout-out. We had a great time with Nick and Tom on the Intercontinental Adventure as guest commentators, and it was a lot of fun. So I'd urge everyone who's VIP to go listen to that. It was a lot of fun to do. As for tonight's show, I was really excited at the beginning because I thought it started out with some really great energy with RK-Bro, and the matches, you know, were well. I mean, you know, listen, you get those four guys in the ring, I think you're going to get good matches. And then the after play with Randy and Matt Riddle was great. I mean, you know, Randy kind of pretended to give him an RKO and they laughed about it. And then it just kind of went downhill. The show lost so much energy, and yeah, I mean, it was, you know, four segments with Kevin Owens and, you know, Cedric Alexander, you know, it just, and then I also have to say is I feel really weird watching all these people standing next to each other screaming without any masks on. It just, you know, personally, I'm not seeing friends of mine this week because we just decided we're not going to a restaurant. We're not going to go out. My sister and nephew and I, we took instant tests before we had Christmas dinner together. You know, I mean, it's not joking around. You know, and I have health issues that I have to watch out for, so I'm being really careful. And it just freaks me out seeing all these people out there.
Yeah, I mean, I know hospital workers are, you know, overwhelmed in a lot of different, you know, big and small and medium cities across the country. And, you know, I mean, it's just statistically the unvaccinated are like exponentially higher chance of getting hospitalized from this. And so, you know, I mean, I implore people get vaccinated, get boosted, and still be careful, especially if you are vulnerable or you're going to be around anybody who might be. And, you know, what can you do? You know, it's been, you know, it is what it is at this point. I mean, they're not going to shut down live sporting events or restaurants because people who have gotten the boosters are going to be fine, even if they get sick in almost, you know, all cases. So, you know, it really is now the pandemic of the unvaccinated when it comes to any kind of actual health dangers or sustained severe illness. And I think there's sort of an attitude of, you know, that's a choice those people have made. And hopefully they make it with the information they need to be willing to take that chance at this point. And, you know, the good sources out there will at least inform them properly before they make that call. So I don't know, you know, but yeah, you watch now. I don't have the same feeling I did early on when we didn't know as much and when there weren't vaccines. You know, I watch now and I'm just like, you know, these are grown people with access to information making that choice. And so, you know, that's their call. You know, I did feel different when the old and vulnerable had no way, you know, other than just, you know, shutting themselves down and not everybody had a chance, could afford not to go to work. Or were in a nursing home. And I feel like we're kind of past that. So it does feel different for me, Nick, but you know, maybe I'm just, it's been so long and I'm just willing to absorb, you know, the habit.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll go to the local co-op grocery store and masks are required and everyone's wearing a mask inside and it's, you know, you don't have to worry about some idiot who's not, you know, and stuff. But, I sit there and I'm thinking about day one coming up and Roman, you know, he's a leukemia survivor. I mean, he's got to be sitting there going, you know, what am I going to do? You know, I mean, you know, is Vince going to write him an extra check to make sure he shows up? You know, you know, I just remember that match was it against Kevin Owens where he actually grabbed a mask from Paul before he went out into the audience. You know,
I hope, you know, anyone who's going to be around him, is tested a lot and hopefully, you know, vaccinated and, you know, he does feel comfortable. If he doesn't, he shouldn't do the match. It's not worth it. You know, if medically he feels it, it puts him more at risk. I mean, I just ordered a bunch of N95, either 3M or Honeywell masks that are, you know, real highly rated, N95 grade, that a pack of 50 coming to my front door. You know, I mean, I want to be able to go out, but you know, the cloth masks with the contagiousness of this new variant is such where, you know, the old preventive measures aren't as effective. So I'm with you. You know, Michael Mansky has been sending MSG reports to us since the late 80s. He would type them up on a typewriter, mail them, then fax them, and then email. Actually phoned him in sometimes back when we had our phone line set up for people to call in results and news tips to us, going back to the early and mid 90s. And he didn't go. It's the first show he's missed in over 30 years because he didn't want to get sick, you know? So, you know, but there is a diversity of, you know, some people are like, ah, come on, just get back to life. If you get a little sick, you'll get over it. I had a family member who was really sick who's, you know, in her 40s and healthy otherwise, and was really sick for over a week and absolutely. And she's in a occupation where it's just impossible to avoid the risk. But, you know, I know people where it wasn't fun at all. So, you know, some people are not taking chances and others are. And Roman Reigns, as you bring up, is somebody to keep an eye on. And I hope fans will be understanding, especially because it's not a $50 price tag or anything, if they do end up delaying that match.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mean to bring everyone down with this. So, you know, moving on just to the show tonight.
Yeah.
I thought
well, it's in the news, thought, Nick, in your defense. I mean, when so many big name wrestlers aren't on the show, you know, I feel like, you know, we don't bring it up a lot on the show unless people,
yeah.
you know, just vehemently disagree with my stance, and they probably think I bring it up all the time, but I really don't. You know, it's very different than it was a year and a half ago in terms of it being a topic on the show. But, I mean, it obviously is back in the news today and,
yeah.
and worth bringing up.
Yeah, well, no, it's – I mean, just for me, you know, it's – I've been careful for 20 months, and
yeah.
I don't want to fuck it up now. You know? Oops, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have said that. You can bleep that. I don't want to mess up now. But
you've added a few minutes to my evening, but I will bleep it, yes.
Sorry.
Post that.
I thought Eric Bischoff was not great tonight. I just obviously, you know, he doesn't have a lot to do. I think the audience threw them all off, and also the fact that I think Miz actually slipped, but
yeah,
and they tried
I'm
to
about
he
that.
He tri- I mean, yeah. he did a great job playing it off. I mean, you got to give Miz credit for being a good entertainer, but. I thought the crowd threw them all off in terms of they were dumping on Maryse. How could you dump on Maryse? She's a mom. But I think it threw them all off, and they were just kind of lost out there until Edge came out.
Well, I mean, I think their goal is for Maryse to be booed, though. I mean, she tried to swerve Edge, and she is with Miz, and Miz is obnoxious, and she's, you know, sweet but actually deceptive and underhanded. And, I mean, the goal is for her to get booed. I mean, she's a heel.
Yeah.
I don't think that would throw them off. I think WWE's booking threw the crowd off. You know, are we cheering for AJ or not? Are we cheering for KO or Cedric here? Like, there are some weird circumstances, you know, where, because, I mean, it's a whole other topic, but, I mean, is AJ, like, clearly the babyface here? I mean, Grayson Waller makes it seem like he is, but I didn't hear anything in his promo about Omos that you couldn't just imagine AJ the heel and Omos the face, and that's what AJ would have said and the Tony said it. What do you think, Bruce? Then I'll throw it to you, Nick.
For me, I think the kind of in the same conundrum that was brought up by Grant with Kevin Owens and how he kind of went, there's kind of an in-between here with them. And I think it's going to be hard for anyone the size of Omos to be booked as the babyface, even though I think that he has natural babyface charisma to him, more so than heel charisma. But Styles, I think they're making him the babyface because if you listen closely to what Cruz was saying tonight in his promo, what we saw on screen, he said that once Styles is done playing Giant Killer or Giant Slayer, so I'm wondering if AJ Styles' next couple of feuds are under this Giant Slayer kind of gimmick, which is, you know, it's reminiscent of Seth Rollins, King Slayer, Beast Slayer, whatever, but where he's going after these huge, huge wrestlers. And even after he gets done with Omos and Aziz, he could still turn that into a, you know, I've been told my whole career that I'm too small and I'll never make it and everyone else is bigger than me, but I'm a pit bull from Georgia and yada, yada, yada. I'm a bulldog, whatever you want to call it. And I think he could turn it into that. There's more money with Styles as a babyface, especially now, I think, than as a heel. So I think that's where they're going. It's just, I'm trying to take the signals and try and map it out in my head as to what makes most kind of sense. And that's where I think they're heading. They usually don't drop in lines like that just for dropping in lines. And so I'm thinking that's where they're headed with AJ Styles, which is going to necessitate him being the babyface. I'm just not sure if Omos can, I mean, his physicality for sure can get there and he yells a lot, but I'm not sure if his natural charisma that will come forth in his match is one of, you know, one of being a heel. It'll probably just be him acting as a heel, and I don't think that's what we'd want to see. So I'm just interested to see how it'll play out, but I do think he's going to be a face for this and moving forward after to Aziz.
Nick, over to you.
Yeah, I think I would have to believe that they want to give AJ a babyface run. And mm-hmm. whoever the heel is to beat Big E, then that lines AJ up to be the face to take that champion on. Whether they this whole thing with Lashley turns out that he's really still going to be a heel, and then you can get an AJ Lashley SummerSlam match or a little later. Because I think people want to like AJ. He's so good in the ring, and forget the fact that he's a flat earther. But they want to like him, and he has such a positive charisma when he's in that direction that he just gets huge responses. And I can see that that would be a great last 2 years as he rides off into the sunset.
I wouldn't be shocked if they turn a face, they get, you know, a couple of feuds with him on Raw, but he gets drafted to SmackDown and is a challenger for Reigns. If Reigns is still around and still a heel champion, I could see, you know, that being something for the fall or going into 2023 if they're playing, you know, a little long ball with their plans for him. I thought Omos was going to be turned into the gentle giant, and AJ would be the obnoxious heel bumping around the ring for him. And I thought that's the direction they're going. I got the feeling that's the direction they thought they were going. And I think maybe I just was projecting my assumptions onto what I was watching, and that's certainly possible. But I think it's ambiguous enough that there wasn't like this definitive moment of like, oh, yay, now we get to cheer for AJ. Omos really screwed him over. Like, it felt like Omos just got frustrated with AJ being obnoxious and said, enough with you. And,
well, not to mention,
you know,
last week, he's the one who got in Omos' face and said, I never should have taken you under my wing, you piece of trash. So, I mean, they're doing that thing where, are they a heel? Are they a face? Is Kevin Owens a heel? Is he a face? It seems to change night to night, situation by situation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well,
totally agree.
Part of the problem, I think, with Omos, too, is he's just still so raw, and he can't talk. A man cannot talk his way out of a paper bag. Or I shouldn't say that. He can't do a promo to get out of a paper bag. And so maybe they're thinking that he needs a manager, and baby faces with managers doesn't work as well as heels with managers. It could be that Lashley goes face and MVP attaches himself to Omos and is the voice for Omos as a heel. I don't know. You know, it's in motion, and it's whether Vince thinks he can do something with Omos. Because from what I've seen, he doesn't have it. He just doesn't have it. Whatever Andre had or Big Show had, you can be big, but if you can't do it, you can't do it.
No, he's progressing really slowly. I will say he's progressing, but it's really slow. But he is progressing. So I'm just gonna, you know, highlight the progression I'm seeing, but maybe that was enough to change the course they have him on, and they have their reasons, and we'll see. Nick, is there anything else you want to bring up?
No, I'm gonna let you go and have a great new year, and keep up all the great work, and everybody go VIP, and that's it. Just be safe, everybody.
Thank you, Nick. Thanks, please do. Yeah. I did see that the CDC did reduce their guidelines from 10 days to 5 days if somebody tests positive but is asymptomatic and vaccinated. So WWE can follow the new – and this was today, you know, the new CDC guidelines of their isolation period. If they're isolated for 5 days, asymptomatic and vaccinated, then they would be free to go. Now, it does say after that you should mask for 5 days just to be safe. But I think – unmasking for the sake of a wrestling match with just another wrestler and a referee is very, you know, is different than just, you know, running around a grocery store coughing in people's faces. So, you know, a bunch of random people at a mall or a sporting event. So I think WWE is within reason, if people are asymptomatic and vaccinated, to expect they can have a full lineup. If everybody who's out right now is vaccinated and asymptomatic, and we just don't know that.
And there's one thing we didn't talk about with these pre-recorded promos from people that are out with COVID that were on tonight, specifically Seth Rollins, and I'm missing one, a Big E, is that in kayfabe, if you think about it, Big E, Bobby Lashley not being on the show, Robert Roode not being on the show, it's selling the attacks and the injuries they suffered last week. You know, Robert Roode got the reckoning on the outside. Bobby Lashley got the powerbomb on the apron and the stomp. Big E got attacked and got hit with the steel step. So in kayfabe, kudos to them. They actually kept people off for a week to sell their injuries. Good for WWE.
There you go. There you go. Any way we can get them to follow a pattern of actually selling injuries is good. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Another guest of Nick and Tom and their excellent intercontinental adventure on this weekend. Sean, welcome.
Wade, it's always good to be on the show with you, man. I did love Nick from Brattleboro. Did an awesome job, and it was fun to get on the show with them. And Doc Bruce, I think this is, if I don't remember, I think it's the first time I've ever been on the phone with you, man. How are you, sir? Good to talk to you.
I'm doing well, thank you. Hope you're doing well. We may have talked before on NXT, but maybe I'm misremembering something.
If it has, it's been a long time. So I was like, man, yes. I don't know if I've talked to him before. So, man, no, it's always good to talk to you. No, I had a few things to bring up. I was actually when they rehashed the Becky Liv stuff, because you know they played the kind of the same video package they had. It was funny that they didn't bring up, and I'm glad they didn't bring up when you know Liv came from behind to attack the person in the where was it that she was attacking the or trying to attack Becky, and turned out it was her other other wrestler in there, and then. Like, that does not make you a babyface. I'm glad they didn't show that, because that was a horrible segment last week, and I'm glad they didn't bring it back up, because that was just – that did not portray Liv in a good light, in my opinion, and I'm glad, you know, it was bad. The – going back to early with the Riddle-Orton stuff, like, I know, Doc, I think you said that, you know, you didn't – Riddle stuff was bad tonight, and it wasn't the best, but I actually enjoy him. I think he's fine. I mean, I would – in the future, I would love for him to go, you know, more serious. But right now, I think it's fine in the lane it's in. And the only problem I had with the matches was, again, they were just too short. Like, you have a lot of time to fill them with Riddle and Gable. Yeah, they wrestled a couple weeks ago when it was like a 3-minute match. Why don't have them wrestle in like a 10 to 15 minute match? Like, they're both awesome in the ring. Gable's doing a great job, you know, for what he's doing as a heel, which is, it's not much, but it's fine. And it's like 4 minutes, and it's just it's good for the 4 minutes. But come on, give them like a lot more than that. They you have time to do it. And then Orton Otis, the same thing. Otis has done a pretty good job as a heel, but he's not winning anything. He's not really going anywhere per se. And Orton just RKOs him in like 3 minutes, and it just yeah, Otis got a lot of offense in the 3 minutes, but the matches just were not too long. What'd you think about those?
Yeah, Bruce, what'd you feel about their choices with match length in light of what else they did on the show, including the long Becky Liv video package? Do you think they made some decent choices or not?
I think both of these matches should have had at least 5 more minutes added to them. I wrote last week that Gable and Orton had the best 3-minute match I can remember seeing. And because I thought it was just the story that was told, it was quick, but it was technical, it was well executed. And another one again tonight with Gable and Riddle was just another fun, quick match. But as Sean is saying, it's just too short. But, you know, Otis did – the pattern up until tonight had been that Riddle would lose and Orton would win. So Otis did beat Riddle a couple weeks ago, but then Orton would beat Gable. And so they would kind of trade these wins. And then tonight, RK-Bro took both wins. But then with especially how the Orton-Otis match ended, with Otis being a bit cocky and then missing the splash and that causing him to be staggered and off balance to be susceptible to the RKO, I think Gable can come out after day one next week and say, it was another lesson for my prized pupil. He needs to not get arrogant. And it was only that's the only reason why he got hit by the RKO. But otherwise, you know, he blocked every single one. But I think they can keep working with this, because I do think that Alpha Academy is a team that is going to take the titles off of RK-Bro. So if that means on Saturday that RK-Bro is going to win. Like I said earlier, I like how these matches kicked off the show and it gave a nice quick pace to them, but that the shortness of the matches really does leave something to be desired, especially because When it comes to Gable specifically, you're seeing so much of all that potential we saw when he first got signed in NXT and when he first was moved to SmackDown and before he became Shorty, and even as Shorty G, right? Just all those things you could see in him, it's just bubbling there, but he really needs that breakout 10, 15 minute, maybe even just like a 12 minute match where he can really show his stuff. His rolling German suplex out of the corner is one of the best moves out there because of how much strength it shows he has in his little body. It's just, I want Gable to get more, basically, and I hope he does.
Yeah. Sean, anything else for us?
Yeah, going back to what you were saying about AJ, and I agree, like, you know, I would rather have him as a babyface for sure. They're not really telling the story well of why he would turn babyface, because Wade, you brought up some good points as far as almost, you know, almost seemed like he was going to be the babyface, and now it's like kind of just turned for whatever reason. I mean, the fans are going to get behind AJ, but going back to Grayson Waller, you know, the correspondent says he's like, doesn't think he's any good. Well, I disagree. I think he's got a lot of potential. He's really good on the microphone. I thought he did really good on the mic for the time he was given in the ring. I mean, for nobody knowing who he was, yeah, that's not his fault. They just don't really know him because they haven't seen him. So, I mean, that's not his fault. He did good for what he was given, and he's really good in the ring. And what do you guys think about his potential, just really quick? Because I think he's got a lot of potential.
Well, Bruce, you're going to get a lot of him on a weekly basis, and we'll get to hear about your thoughts on his development. Where do you rank him at this stage, and what are his strengths?
From what I've seen, character-wise, his floor is The Miz. He's a better in-ring worker than The Miz, in my opinion. I think he could flirt with, like The Miz, he could flirt with the WWE or Universal Championship picture, but I think he's someone who's best fit to be basically that Dolph Ziggler role, mid-card, maybe not yelling so much, but someone there who's going to put on good matches, can sometimes go into the main event, but is going to be a great heel. One thing he's done, even though he's so young and inexperienced, is he knows his character, and he's hitting his character spot on every time he comes out and makes an appearance. And I think, especially the lead to War Games, that's where you really saw him come out, and that in that match specifically, him getting those big spots, I think that gave him the confidence, and you're seeing that come through on screen. Because I agree with Sean that I think there's more to Waller than what Grant was saying on from his report of, yeah, the fans don't know him yet because they're probably not watching NXT. I mean, literally a quarter of the audience is watching NXT that's watching Raw and SmackDown. So that's going to leave a lot of fans not knowing who's there. But I think at worst, he's going to be The Miz. And if that's your career in WWE, it is a very, very, very successful career.
Well, what do you think of them having AJ in a crossover angle, Bruce, with NXT? Does that, you know, with now that word is out about it, do you anticipate that being enough to give a boost to NXT viewership?
What's interesting is for VIP listeners who listened to eight years back with Tom Stopp and Kelly Wells, this is right around the time where you're seeing 8 years back, where you're seeing more and more of the quote main roster wrestlers appearing on NXT, whether it's like the Titus O'Neils or the Tyson Kidd. You're seeing more and more of them on the show. And I think this might be a callback to that because yes, it's developmental, but one thing that the early NXT had is they still had people like, you know, say what you want, but Jinder Mahal, ring veteran, they had him there. They had those kind of people, like the Italian, the women's division, to anchor them and to move them into what became known as the Black and Gold brand. So for me, there is really, aside from Kevin Owens, probably there's no one better on Raw besides AJ Styles to kind of make that crossover appearance. He never went through NXT, so there's not that connection to him, but he has that rep. He is one of the best wrestlers of the last 20 years, certified Hall of Famer, no matter if it's WWE or I think it was the Luvez Hall of Fame. I'm blanking on the name. Whether it's any of those, he is certified. Yeah. And for me, that kind of rub, I think, does more to try and bring some of those wrestling fans back, even knowing that it's developmental, because if you're AJ Styles is working with someone, it probably means that he has enough clout to where I think he said, I want to work with him. And if AJ Styles is saying that, then I think that's going to give a lot of influence to wrestling fans to tune in and see what's going on.
Very good. Sean, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I wanted to bring up when during the ceremony when Byron and Corey, I do enjoy them going at each other now. It kind of was kind of dumb at first, but I mean, it is dumb, but I enjoy it more than I think I probably should. And Byron was talking about, man, I'd rather drink a bunch of Tabasco sauce than, because this is not very appealing to him. He said something sort of like that. And I was like, oh gosh, I just cracked up. I thought it was hilarious. It was just so good. Their back and forth was great. But the one question I was going to bring up, the last quick thing, was going back to Priest and Dolph, which I thought they had a really good match. Didn't care for the finish per se again. I mean, I know they're doing the Priest dark side. I mean, you know, do you think there's any upside with this character at all? And I like what they had done with Priest, but now I feel like he's kind of, yeah, he's got the U.S. title, but I feel like he's kind of in a holding pattern right now. And I don't know if there's any real, like, championship level potential. So I wanted to hear you guys kind of talk about where you think he might go coming up. And that's all I really had. Wade, I'm curious. Let me know what you thought of the show. I'm really curious what you thought of it, because, you know, we had a good time on there quite a bit. And then Bruce, man, it's good to talk to you. And thank you for taking my call, Wade, as always.
Awesome, Sean. Always good to hear from you. Happy New Year. Bruce, go ahead and give your thoughts on Damian Priest. They really stressed, they've even given his temper, his dark side, a name. It's his Damian. And, you know, he's snapping. He's not breaking at five. He's getting DQ'd. Certainly Ziggler instigated it with his, trash talking and grabbing his face and slapping him. Is this a road to being a heel? Is this a road to just getting him more over as a babyface because he seems so, you know, easygoing and chill that, you know, I think one of our observations before this whole thing started is he just seems kind of too easygoing, you know, like, and now it's like they agreed and they addressed that in this way, which gives him, you know, something else to talk about. You know, I mean, it's easy to criticize an idea that gets executed by any wrestler or promoter in terms of a gimmick or adding to somebody's character. But it's not easy to come up with something that works. And I think they gave Priest a long time to try to like click, and there just seemed to be something not there. And so I do understand a brainstorming session. I do understand going, you know, Vince McMahon or whomever going, we got to have something different here. You know, Damian Priest, we got to come up with something different. And, you know, whatever inspired the idea that, you know, if you push him too far, he snaps. I'm for them trying something as opposed to the status quo of what they were doing, which seemed to have just sort of a mid-card, you know, maybe higher end mid-card ceiling on it. When, you know, for a while there was a thought, you know, this could be a main event act. But, you know, he's been other places and hasn't been the centerpiece guy. Seth Rollins was centerpiece in ROH. Damian Priest wasn't. And, you know, Todd Martin brought this up a month or so ago. Sometimes, you know, where you get pushed when you're on the indie scene, when the promoter has to decide who will draw because they need to pay rent, they need to make payroll, sometimes they lose money. Those decisions are often based on more than just your cosmetic proclivities like Vince McMahon has. So, you know, maybe we just are seeing some intangible limitation on Priest, but your thoughts on this attempt to take him to a different level?
Well, it's just like WWE to go in the extreme opposite direction to try and get a point over about a character here. And basically, Damian is his dark passenger. And I know you watch Dexter, so that's essentially what he's becoming when he's out there. And for me, so just to go back, I said in August, I even wrote an article that Damian Priest was going to win the Royal Rumble at his pace that he was going at. Because if you remember, after WrestleMania, he won with Bad Bunny, but then he lost that handicap match to The Miz and Morrison on Raw. But after that, he won all his singles matches, and he'd only lose in multi-person matches, but he was never the person to take the fall. Then all of a sudden, they do this character switch, and I think what hurt his momentum the most is his winning streak ended because of dumb DQs like this. And at least from what I remember, I don't remember him losing up until the DQs recently. And I think that did more damage to him and his push than him being easygoing and just going out there kind of as the cool guy working and winning matches. Because at least when you're winning matches, you're still building momentum. Now, I wrote tonight that for me, I won't have an issue with this if they do sort of, you know, I'm a huge manga and anime fan, a lot of RPGs. Like, if they do kind of a similar story to that where someone finds a new power, they have trouble controlling it, and it's a journey until they find out how to contain it and use it at their discretion to then become the most powerful or most peak self. If that's the kind of journey we go on with Damian Priest, where throughout the weeks he's learning to channel that aggression better and not lose in stupid ways like this, and actually turn it on when it needs be, and, you know, maybe next time he gets slapped by Ziggler, instead of going enraged, he kind of takes a deep breath, just smiles at Ziggler, and then, you know, goes from there. I think that's the progression I would like to see regarding this specific presentation of Damian Priest. That's the only thing that I will find will invest me in it, because otherwise I think it's a bit too cartoonish as it's being portrayed right now, and that doesn't do him any favors.
I like the idea that it's actually something he learns to control. It's established, it's powerful, and you sort of wait to see if you know, somebody makes, you know, Bruce Banner angry, and he becomes the Hulk, you know, that kind of thing. But he has to learn, how to manage it and control it. So it's there in the toolbox.
Right.
And the fans know it's there, but he isn't just seeming undisciplined and lacking, you know, discretion in when it gets triggered. All right, let's read a couple emails here on a couple topics we haven't talked about. Boy, did I get a kick out of this. Brandon LeClaire pointed this out on Twitter during Raw. After the Veer vignette, I saw WWE put up, you know, Veer coming soon to Raw. And the person who retweeted it typed in above it, "Send Veer."
Yep.
Now, that's, you know, Hook, Taz's son Hook, is just like, you know, a phenomenon right now. And,
right,
you know, yes, and CM Punk's like, you know, "Send Hook." And that just turned into a whole meme. And so WWE, it's like, you know, whenever they acknowledge AEW, you're like, whoa. You know, I mean, WWE is a behemoth. And AEW, although, you know, they come from a richer family than Vince McMahon has, you know, ever come close to being, they are still the upstart brand, with a lot less money coming in directly as a result of their wrestling company, you know, their events and stuff. They don't have the TV rights fees and streaming deals that WWE does. So, you know, they are obviously smaller and younger. So when WWE acknowledges them, it's news. But are they, I mean, Veer might be a cool character, but I don't know if you're dooming him by making it look like you're trying to, like, glom off of, you know, this organic Hook thing. But part of me is just sort of, like, amused and glad they do stuff like this, because, you know, just a little snarkiness on social media, I think, can get a buzz going. And as long as Veer delivers as a character, you know, maybe no harm is done. What do you think, Bruce?
Well, from what I saw of Veer before the draft, when he was in the ring with Jinder Mahal and Shanky, he seemed to be the one that actually had the most potential of the three of them, which isn't good for Jinder Mahal, of course, because of how long he's been wrestling. But so I think Veer has a natural snap to his power moves, and I think that's going to serve him well. My issue is, he's basically taking the Glacier playbook and really milking his entrance, because they've been running these vignettes, I feel like, since the draft happened. And that was a couple months ago. And it's just like, when is he actually going to debut? This is almost worse than the Eva Marie vignettes that you didn't know when she was going to debut, because it's always the same two vignettes, either the one with no voiceover or the one that had the voiceover tonight. It's always those two same ones with the same footage of him taking out people who aren't even signed to the roster anymore, and John Morrison and Jackson Ryker, et cetera. So, it's interesting. I want to have hope, because Veer, if you don't know his backstory, he has a huge following from India, because he was signed as a major league pitcher to, I think, the Pittsburgh Pirates, if I remember correctly. Obviously, it didn't pan out, but he won a contest, a TV contest, to be signed. And so there's what they hope for Jinder Mahal, I think, is actually more feasible with Veer or Veer Mahan. But again, we just don't know enough and haven't seen enough to make an accurate prediction. Though what I have seen leads me to believe that there's more optimism surrounding him than previous pushes regarding wrestlers from India. But again, I don't know if you're doing him any favors by attaching him to Hook, even in a tangential way, because as good as Veer might be, I don't think he'll be as good as Hook is right now. And that's saying something, because I know people are talking about, oh, you're all getting too sucked up into the Hook Kool-Aid and whatnot. But, I mean, have you watched this man work and do his thing? he is a bona fide future. He's a star right now, but he's definitely going to be at the top of the business in a few years once he gets everything down in terms of the little things. He has all the basics down. It's just him fine-tuning his skills and, you know, the mic work, and he should be fine. So hopefully Veer is also fine, but I think people, because of this, will always have some kind of comparison to Hook with Veer Mahan. And let's see how it works out, Wade. Let's see how it works.
This is not in the email, but I want to read a tweet from Jimmy Smith. Jimmy Smith said, "My apologies, Raw fans. Battling a little cold, not COVID, was tested. Voice had trouble going 3 hours. Be ready for day one." And I read that, and I was so disappointed because I thought this was like his best night, because he wasn't doing that grating, grinding, straining to lift something heavy every time he said something. He sounded like a normal human being, and I was like, finally, I can listen for 3 hours, and I'm not irritated by Jimmy Smith doing that, what WWE encourages announcers to do, that grinding, grating voice, everything has to be, ah. And I was like, this is so good. I mean, like, did someone talk to him about it? Did he just decide it? I had no idea that the only reason he sounded good is because he had a cold and he couldn't do that normal straining to lift a car by the bumper for three straight hours that he does needlessly and obnoxiously. So I felt bad. I thought WWE just, you know, decided to produce him differently. And so I'm kind of bummed out. But this was a sample, I don't know if you noticed, Bruce, of Jimmy talking like in a normal voice. And he's got a good voice. And it was like a good job announcing tonight. And he's learned a lot about the product. He's got the chemistry down with Corey and Byron. And I was like, the last frontier is to stop sounding like he's straining to lift something heavy. And, oh, no, it's, he had a cold. And that's the only reason he sounded good.
Yeah, I did notice his voice sounded a bit different, and maybe because of that, nothing really stood out to me negatively from him tonight.
Yeah,
I did praise him a couple weeks ago because he made an astute comment about the Kimura being a strong man's hold, and it takes a lot of strength to pull that off. But those are very few and far between. However, if there's instances where we can't say anything negative about him in terms of what he said, that is a step in the right direction for Jimmy Smith, and I hope he keeps going in that direction.
Totally, totally. All right, let's see here. We covered that, so let's see here. We'll go to Zach in Texas. Gentlemen, I think Vince has finally lost it. There was yet another massive COVID outbreak within WWE, one that caused Becky Lynch, the biggest star in the company, not named Roman Reigns, to miss this week's Raw and potentially day one. Today, Fightful reports that WWE is lifting the weekly testing requirements. What the hell? WWE would rather not know if one of their athletes has COVID? That's the height of irresponsibility. Even the NFL, which has a stricter and more transparent COVID protocol, didn't go that far in the amendment to their policy last week. This move by WWE puts the burden on the individual wrestlers to test themselves in order to keep their coworkers safe. Does this not put someone like Roman Reigns at greater risk if people can come into the building potentially positive but untested? Is this not negligence on WWE's part? And P.S. Bruce, you're no longer the only Ph.D. around these parts. I received mine in history a couple of weeks ago. Congratulations, Dr. Barber. So I don't know if there's a lot more to add to it, but I think that does underline, you know, what we were saying earlier about, you know, the liability issue versus, you know, just see no evil, hear no evil, you know, just we just don't want to know, you know, and that's how this comes across. Is we just don't want to know. It could be other reasons, and that's why I said I'm holding off, you know, on my firm judgment until I hear a little more detail. But I'm having a hard time imagining what rationale there would be that ultimately makes the wrestlers and all the personnel safer. You know, so yeah, I don't know.
Well, and the thing, whenever Edge comes out and he runs so close to the crowd, I always cringe a little bit. Because I don't know about his vaccination status. I'm sure he's fine. But I don't trust people attending events fully to – I mean, as you can see, people in the crowd, they weren't wearing their masks, all of them. And I can't guarantee that all of them are vaccinated or boosted. And for these wrestlers, too, with Seth Rollins testing positive and, you know, thankfully asymptomatic, you have to – to wonder how that might affect Becky Lynch, as the other doctor was saying in regards to her match on Saturday. And if she's not able to be in that match, regardless of what you think, she is the biggest moneymaker in WWE. And it's not Roman Reigns. From what I've seen and all the reports I've gotten, she is the most popular wrestler in all of WWE. And losing her and the possibility of not having Roman Reigns on the card because rightfully putting his health first, that might make day one of the more infamous pay-per-views in all of history, especially with the big build they had to this card. And you know, I'm hoping for the best in terms of all the wrestlers and their health and being able to do what they want to do, but it's just, I guess if you don't do the dishes and you don't, you just ignore them, you can, you don't have to ever worry about the dishes, right? So it's just, it's all bad, Wade. It's all bad.
I'm curious if there's some people who, you know, in WWE who are not happy about this, and if they, you know, express discontent with the idea of being that, you know, they could end up sick because somebody isn't tested and is around them. I don't have a sense of how much people would speak out about that and what the culture is in the locker room as far as that goes. People are, you know, with a couple exceptions, just kind of trying to go along, get along, and hope for the best. And I think the attitude is, you know, we're all healthy, but there's, you know, older referees, there's, you know, other people who are working around, you know, around them who they just don't know their medical history, and they might not be as, you know, as healthy and might be more susceptible. So,
and of course,
I don't know.
The irony is that some of those wrestlers who were released were well known to be anti-vaxxers, and now they don't have to get tested or vaxxed. So it's just all like, it's got to be a bit
But I will say, I mean, if WWE, like, did find out who wasn't vaxxed and released them for the safety of their crew, and all they have left are people who haven't vaccinated. I mean, I heard the NHL vaccination rate is like 97%, you know, in the NHL. I mean, like, if WWE has, like, this mega high vaccination rate, you know, they might feel comfortable not going to the trouble of testing everybody, thinking, hey, you know, y'all had a chance to get your booster. If you do, you're going to be fine. If you don't think you are, let us know. You know, if they pulled people aside and said, we'll pay you and you don't have to come to shows. You know, Tony Khan did that early on. You know, anybody who didn't want to be at these shows, even with all the precautions they were taking early in the pandemic, you didn't get paid any less if you opted out. So, I mean, there is room for me to find out something that would mitigate this head-scratching, puzzling move that seems on face value. And it's, I think, the reaction, you know, that I'm seeing online and in emails, which is, oh, they just don't want to know because it gets in the way of them doing their shows. So I want to be, you know, as fair as possible.
Sure.
That maybe they have an incredibly high vaccination rate and people who aren't have a chance to opt out.
Well, I believe Tony Khan indicated to you that the AEW roster, I don't think he put an actual number, but he seemed to indicate above 90%. So if WWE is around there, then they should be fine. I should have been more specific, and I meant for, like, the people who are at least probably from their perspective. They're looking at it as a bit ironic.
Yeah. And, I mean, I guess if you're a wrestler who interacts with fans, I mean, I think that wrestler should test themselves so they don't possibly spread it to somebody else during that span of time when you think, oh, do I have a cold or is that a scratchy throat and you're not sure, but you go do the show and you're right there with the fans. I mean, you don't want to be a wrestler giving it to some kid who isn't old enough to get vaccinated, who then gives it to his grandma who's, you know, going to be hospitalized. Yeah, I mean, it's just so, you know, obviously, I mean, flights are being canceled left and right. Professional sports seasons are being, you know, delayed, and there's all these substitute players. I mean, it's still there. It's a thing. And let's just, you know, we've like you said, you've been careful 20 months. You know, we can still work together to get through this. So anyway, we haven't brought up the 24/7 match, which I assume we would not have been treated to, Bruce, if not for all the no shows, the unavailables. We got this. As weird as it was to see Kevin Owens against Cedric, who's a heel, who's a face, or, you know, AJ and Apollo Crews. Oh, I guess we're supposed to cheer for AJ after all. Even though we called Omos a piece of trash and, you know, didn't really explain anything about him that would make us more sympathetic to him otherwise, this was confusing. R-Truth and Tamina teaming up against Dana Brooke and Reggie. R-Truth and Reggie, neither of them are at all heelish. So I guess they just were aware of that, and I give them credit for playing up that Tamina had a bad attitude towards R-Truth, and R-Truth was just fun-loving and gregarious and innocent, and that led to, you know, some issues between them. I mean, it was only about 3 minutes of action in the ring. But it did fill a segment, and it kept, you know, it saved us, I guess, from some sort of additional Christmas-themed pre-tape.
Right. I'm sure they had some pre-tape ready for this, but I'm just going to pull a Todd Martin from the fix and say it was a match.
Yep. Anything else from Raw you want to bring up before we wrap up here, Bruce?
The only thing I want to – I just really want to highlight the just – you know, Kevin Owens is really good at this professional wrestling thing. Who would have thought? He's just so good. And, yes, we quibbled at is he a face or is he a heel. But regardless, the material he is given for his promos, he delivers with such conviction and such emphatic genuineness that you believe what he's saying. His quips in between people talking just are so hilarious. And it's just relatable because we know people like that. I do that all the time. Right? So for me, I know people are like, oh, he should have signed with AEW, but I'm never going to besmirch or bemoan someone making the best decision that they think for them and their family. So kudos to him for getting paid, getting the contract, ensuring their future. But for WWE, it's a huge boon because he, in the ring, on the mic, character, the psychology, his facial expressions during matches, everything he does is just so, so good. And it's a big loss for AEW, a big game for WWE. And while I don't think he's going to win the WWE Championship on Saturday, I think he's going to be the fall guy, actually. He, at this rate, I still think the best story is Jey Uso winning the Rumble and then pinning Roman clean at WrestleMania. But don't be surprised if Kevin Owens is actually the one to win the Royal Rumble this year because he's just that damn good.
All right. I mean, I am a fan of Kevin Owens' work in heaven forever. And any praise, I'm nodding along. And I'm not taking sides on whether I want him to sign with WWE or AEW. I will just say, without a doubt, WWE is going to be a better TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ring and on the mic and easier to watch because Kevin Owens is still on the roster and has signed to be there long enough. You know, to be part of the show for years, and they can certainly, you know, have reason to invest in him now even more than if they were hesitant before. So,
sure. Good
stuff. All right, Bruce, thank you so much. Everybody, be on the lookout for Bruce's NXT coverage at pwtorch.com on Tuesday nights. Happy New Year, Bruce. It's been a fun show and great having you on again.
Well, Happy New Year to you too, Wood. And you know, even though it's been a bit cold in Hawaii with our weather just below 70, I've been holding on out here. I've been keeping strong. So I'm doing it for all of you in Minnesota and all of you across the Northeast. I'm doing it strong out here in Hawaii for all of you.
Thank you so much. You had to throw that in. I think it topped out at 19 today with a wind chill that felt like negative 10. Got all bundled up. Dog still gets to walk every day. And there was some crazy frozen snow that was really fun to walk on, and it's just making this really interesting, like, echoey, cracky noise. It was just insane. I'd never seen a snow with, like, a sheet of ice on top of it. It was really interesting, and it was genuinely fun, like, going out with my family and walking the dog in it. And so we get real winters here. As long as you dress appropriately, it's not that bad, and we had a pretty white Christmas, too. So it looks like it should. It looks like a winter Christmas movie around here. But, you know, you can go out and, you know, bike and hike in shorts.
Oh, yeah, we sandwich beach days on Friday and Saturday and Sunday between Christmas, so, you know.
Oh, that's just crazy sounding. All right, thanks so much. On that note, thanks, everybody, for putting up with our COVID talk. Like I said, I shouldn't apologize because, I mean, it's just so in the news right now. And, you know, we all have our opinions, and there's also facts that aren't opinions, and I like to lean on those as much as possible, too. And hopefully WWE is being prudent and keeping everybody as safe as possible. And we are in for perhaps a roller coaster week, or perhaps the worst is past us and everyone's going to isolate for, you know, 5+ days and things will go on as scheduled. If Roman shows up, I hope that is a sign of due diligence and comfort level. He has shown, you know, he puts his health first. So we'll learn a lot as far as that goes on Saturday night. All right. Like I said, I'll be back on Wednesday night with the Post Dynamite Show right here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Thanks to Bruce Hazelwood. Thanks to our callers and emailers and our on-site correspondent, Grant. And if you want to be an on-site correspondent, you can email us, WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. and put your name in city or put your city in the subject line. And we'd love to have you as our on-site correspondent for an upcoming post show. Until next time, Wade Keller on behalf of everyone I just mentioned, signing off.